Hello and welcome to episode 95 of Speak Beastie for September 8th, 2019. I'm Ariel.
And I'm Juliana.
And we have a new host. You may have heard of him because he was actually on an episode with me months back. Craig, if you'd like to say hello, introduce yourself again.
Hello again. It's me, Craig, the new host. Yeah, as Ariel said, I guested on an episode a while back and I did a hangout with Megan at one point beforehand. So.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So it's fun to properly come on board. I am a Gryffindor and a Horned Serpent, for those of you that are interested out there. My Patronus is a piebald stallion. I don't really know much about horses, so I don't know what that says about me, but...
I'm in the same boat as you, Ariel. I have no idea what the heck that horse looks like.
Oh, it was also one of the first results that came up when I Googled. Oh, that's a pretty... I like that. I like the coloring of it. That's cool looking. I like that.
It looks cool, right? Yeah. So, outside of Potter World, I live in Washington, D.C., and I work for the public library down here. I'm a children's and teen librarian.
We always have to have a male librarian on the show, apparently.
I know, we got rid of Michael and we picked up Craig. Yeah. Who could ask for more?
We got to work at a library.
That niche.
Yeah.
And if I'm not obsessing over anything relating to Harry Potter, I'm probably obsessing over anything related to horror and scary movies and Halloween. Because the other podcast that I do, Splatter Chatter, is all about that kind of stuff. So if you're also interested in that, check us out.
Nope. Remember.
That's a hard no for me.
I remember talking a little bit with you last time about your other podcast and about like horror movies and whatnot. Because I'm a very scared person.
Yes.
But same. I've recently been trying to watch more. Because my boyfriend and I recently rewatched It Chapter 1 to prepare for It Chapter 2. Yeah. And that's like about, I feel like that's about my threshold. Like,
let me gauge my threshold for you. I thought that the Haunted Mansion in Disney World was scary.
That's my favorite ride.
I was scared what was going to pop out as we went around in the Haunted Mansion in Disney World. That's the game I'm playing at here.
I will say, when I was 10 years old, because it's the only time I've been able to ride Tower of Terror, I was scared on Tower of Terror. I hated that. That was scary to me. I don't know if I'd be scared now, though, but I don't know. I'm trying to introduce myself to more scary things to try to get past it, because I don't want to be scared anymore.
Well, we have a whole episode where we recommend beginner level horror for people who want to ease into the genre, so I can hit you up with some recommendations.
I would love that, because Halloween's coming
up. Safe corner.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for introducing yourself again, Ish, Craig, and welcome to Speak Beastie. We are so glad to have you here, and we can't wait to see what wonderful, fantastic things you bring to the show. So,
Thank you.
Up next, we have the Phoenix Register.
And now a message from our sponsors. Hey you, yes you, the magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint, just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as one dragon dollar a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind the scenes features. But wait, there's more. Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wigs Knees and How.
So this week we actually have a fairly decent amount of news, and I'm just going to kind of brush over most of it because, like, you can get into the nitty gritty if you want. I know MuggleNet did a bunch of articles on all these things. So if you're really looking for, like, an in-depth analysis of some of the topics we're going to hit up in the news, hit up MuggleNet, and they got your back. So first, one of the things that I thought was, like, the cutest thing of the week was Pottery Barn Teen debuted their Fantastic Beasts room decor on August 29th, and it's freaking adorable. There's a Niffler beanbag, and I want it. But it's $308.
That's
so
cool. I feel I'm not buying it. I wouldn't say I'm a connoisseur of making beanbags because I've never made one before, but I feel like I can make one for cheaper.
That's what I'm saying.
That's so, how big is it? Like,
I don't know. I put the link. Let me open the link.
Well, I didn't know if they did like a size for reference, if it's like a normal beanbag, a like children's beanbag, or like one of those oversized beanbags.
I put a picture in the doc, so it's next to books.
It looks respectable.
Yeah, it looks like it's of a decent size.
Yeah. I don't know.
But like even some of the other things that are in this like collection, they're just like, they're not the cheapest of decor items. Like,
yeah.
They honestly don't really seem like super approachable price points for a lot of the things. So this I was like,
yeah.
For all the people who enjoy Fantastic Beasts and Harry Potter, it's for a certain subset of people who can afford it.
Like take for instance, there's a Wizarding World Nagini pillow cover that is going, just the pillow cover. This is not including the pillow.
Oh boy.
And it looks like it's probably like a 12 by 12 pillow. It's $40 for a cover of a pillow.
Guys, come on.
Come on.
Like, who the heck has $40 to drop on a pillow cover?
I wish those were my problems. Like,
honestly.
I wish I was like, oh, I only dropped $40 on a pillow cover.
What a deal. I felt like I was stealing when I walked out of that store.
This makes me think of the Pottery Barn episode of Friends, where just when they were talking about how expensive they, this was back in the early 2000s, like, and now $300 beanbag chairs and $40 pillow covers. It's just, come on, Pottery Barn.
That has changed.
It's too much.
It is.
If you're looking for some very expensive but cute Fantastic Beasts room decor, please head over to Pottery Barn Teen, not sponsored by Pottery Barn.
Or if you're like Harry James Potter and just like blow your money on whatever.
Yeah, if you get to the end of the week and you're just like just spraying all the bills everywhere, just like go and get yourself a Niffler beanbag chair.
I'll take the heck.
So that is our first thing on the docket. Next, we had one of our favorite events throughout the entirety of the school year. It's back to Hogwarts.
Yes.
And I know we were all excited that we, again, did not get a letter inviting us to get our wizarding degree at Hogwarts. So
well, I'm well past the age, so I'd just be dumbfounded if I did.
I was kind of hoping I could go for, like, my wizard GRE or something. You know, it'd be nice if it showed up, but we all have wishes, and not all of them come true.
Yeah, too true.
But we actually had two of our Speak Beastie hosts. Oh, actually, I'm sure. I think Jen is social media, technically.
They're correspondents, right?
Yes. Yeah. So every other week, rotating with this podcast, the correspondence meet, which I'm actually part of the correspondence too. I just, because of scheduling and like the fact that it's fallen on days where I'm like, I'm on vacation or I have like a really, really, really busy day. I've only been on one of the four episodes, but I will be on the next one. But yeah, we meet up, me and like four to five of the other Speak BC Common Remembers to discuss like the first, we started from episode one of Speak BC and just like discuss what was discussed there. And also, like, the predictions that people made and stuff like that. So, really fun. Both those ladies are absolutely lovely, but they are literally the first thing in the video that Pottermore posted.
They are their... the first faces you see and voices you hear.
It literally, like, shows the Pottermore logo. There's, like, a very, very quick, like, panel of King's Cross, and then it's, like, them for, like, a solid, like, 20 to 30 seconds.
It's great.
That's awesome. So,
they're awesome. If you want to check that out, all you have to do is go to either any of Pottermore's social media outlets. They posted it on September 1st. So if you just scroll back to that date, you can see their lovely faces. We love you, Jen and Sam. And the other big thing that happened at Back to Hogwarts was that Pottermore made this lovely announcement via social media. Quote, "The journey, hashtag, back to Hogwarts is just beginning. The reimagined sorting ceremony coming soon," end quote. Literally in the doc, I wrote another quiz, WTF.
I can't do this to myself. I already had a crisis when I was 19 and was like sorted into Ravenclaw. I was like, yes, perfect. Everything's great. And then when they were about to end old Pottermore and I was like, oh, I'll resort myself for funsies. And I was sorted into Hufflepuff and then it took years to accept I was a Hufflepuff. Now I'm like, I swear on my life. If they sort me into a different house,
I will lose my shit. That's what's gonna happen.
Yeah. Oh, whatever, guys. Whatever, Pottermore.
But there's no set release date on that. That's gonna come with, probably as part of their app that they're putting out. That's still being tested, I believe, in New Zealand and Australia, which we talked about, which I talked about last time we did the this podcast on the news segment. So we'll see what happens. I don't foresee me having a positive reaction to it, but that's just me personally. So we'll see. So the last thing that happened this week, we had the Wizards Unite Fan Fest on the 31st and the 1st at the White River State Park in Indianapolis, Indiana. And I don't, are you guys still playing Wizards Unite?
I never did.
That's fine.
I never did either.
Oh, wow. I'm the only one then. Okay. I'm currently on level 23. So that's... just killing it out there, you know?
I don't know what that means.
Yeah, but... I don't know what that means, but it's not respectable.
It sounds like a lot of levels.
I think that person who's the highest right now that I'm, like, friends with through MuggleNet, I think she's probably getting close to level 30, but she plays a lot.
I've never been big on mobile games. I don't know. I tried Pokemon Go years ago, and I was like, it was fun for, like, a month, but even then I wasn't super...
like a hot minute.
Yeah, like, I wasn't super like, oh my gosh, I have to battle. Like, it was just like, oh, here's a Pokemon. I'm going to catch it and name it something fun. And that was about it. I don't know.
I mean, I'm not really a huge game person either, but, like, what I've done with this is, like, because you can just, like, find things, like, throughout the day, and it'll kind of, like, you'll run out of things to find on the game, too. Like, you'll probably like Pokemon Go, too, because I actually never played Pokemon Go. But you can only, like, there's stuff on the map that's in front of you. But once the stuff is gone, it takes a little while for it to regenerate. So, like, at work, if I have, like, an extra, like, 2 minutes where I'm just, like, sitting there, I'll, like, collect one thing. And then, like, because of where I work, there's not, like, a lot of stuff around it. Like, me collecting that one thing gets rid of everything else that's on the map. So I'm like, okay. I'm like, that was 2 minutes, and now I'm done.
That doesn't sound too bad. I think I just got so burned by Mystery at Hogwarts that I was just like, no more mobile Harry Potter games.
Yeah. So they had this fan fest. I know that I was listening to MuggleCast earlier in the week. I know Andrew from MuggleCast actually went. He said it was really fun. All the reviews that I read online, they said it was really fun. It looked like it was actually like, it actually did look fun. I watched some of the YouTube people. And so I guess thousands of people showed up. They had like some of the foundables, which are the things that you can save, like made into like full size, like real life props. Like they had like full size dragon eggs and like a blow up Niffler and like all this cool junk. And they were selling merch and stuff, but their big draw was that you were going to be able to find like these exclusive foundables, which are the things you collect. and their big thing was dragons. So I guess they had enough people who showed up for the event and got up to the level that they wanted to, that they're going to bring this dragon event to all the other like continents in the world. So Oceania is getting an Antopedian opali. No idea if I pronounced that right. In Asia, the Middle East, and India, they're getting the Chinese fireball. Americas and Greenland, they're getting the Peruvian viper tooth. And Europe and Africa are getting the Welsh green dragon. So these are specific dragons that you can find based on your location where you are in the world.
Also, it's like they're wanting us to travel.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like people who are like, oh, well, I guess I gotta go to Asia.
Gotta go to New Zealand.
Fireball.
Just continent hop real quick.
Well, I mean, if you can apparate, you can easily collect these dragons all within one day. So, like, we all just got to take apparition lessons real quick. Yeah, so that was the kind of the general gist of it. And then there's also going to be a global event on September 7th around the dragons. So if you're like me and you're actually playing, keep your eye out for it. If you're not, don't worry about it. It's not a big deal. That is pretty much everything we have on the Phoenix Register for this week. We actually had a decent amount of stuff, so that's very exciting.
So. Yeah, because sometimes it's like, no Phoenix Register this week.
Yeah. I feel like we can always dig up something small, especially since like the Wizarding World app is coming out soon, probably. So that'll be a whole nother shenanigans. So up next, we have our Owl Post. Two weeks ago, when we were wrapping up the podcast, we asked our podcast question from episode 94, which was, whose baby murdering do you think was worse, Grindelwald's or Voldemort? So just for reference, we discussed murdering children, murdering babies, and that lovely heartwarming theme that we all love to hear about on a Sunday morning. So we took some of the comments that we got, I believe, from the Facebook page, and I'll just read you off what people said. So I want to say this is Richa or Richa. I'm very sorry if I pronounced this incorrectly. Lovely name. I'm terrible at pronunciation. Richa said Grindelwald. He did it just because he could, and he didn't even do it himself. He let his henchperson do it because he needed to protect his image. Interesting. And then Lexi had another vote for Grindelwald. Having a young son myself, I was a mess after that scene. I haven't watched Crimes of Grindelwald again because I get emotional every time I think about it. But I guess the difference is we have actively seen Grindelwald and his followers kill a toddler in this movie. Voldemort and the Death Eaters had probably done the same. It was just never explicitly shown. I think that's true.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Yeah, I feel like Voldemort probably killed a few children in his day. We just, like, because the Harry Potter books are so focused on, like, Harry, like, all the time, it's like, we don't really see anything that's outside of Harry's blinders, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
The question last week just kills me, because it's like, they were both very, obviously very wrong, like, I get it, but it's just like, Voldemort failed. Like, he didn't.
Yeah.
He tried and he didn't. And Grindelwald didn't even try. He had someone else do it. So, I mean, they were both very wrong. It just, I don't know. I don't, and like to like try and picture like Voldemort going around like killing babies afterwards because he's like, do I still have it? Like, can I still kill babies? Was it just this one?
So honestly, I feel like that's something he would actually do. He'd be like, am I wand broken? What the heck? I've had to get it out. No, I'm fine. Okay. Cool. Cool.
Just testing. Sorry.
Sorry.
Actually, you
got a dead baby.
But, you know.
You'll be fine. Don't worry about it.
This is a Hufflepuff's view of Voldemort being like, sorry I killed your baby. I was just making sure I still could.
And I got it, baby.
No pun intended.
Yeah. The point that you make, Ariel, is actually funny because one of the other comments on here is from Meg, and it's Grindelwald. Voldemort only tried to kill a child that he deemed to be a threat, but Grindelwald did it just because he could. So, like, you're making the point that Voldemort tried. He didn't actually kill the kid.
He waltzed over to the Potter's house himself, and you know he was gonna kill Harry himself. So like, I don't know what I was gonna say. Good on him, but that's not. I was just gonna be like, you know, he at least did it himself, whereas Grindelwald was like, go kill that baby for me, nameless hench person. You know, like it just. I don't know. Like,
at least Voldemort had the balls to do it himself, you know?
Yeah, he was like, yeah. I heard the prophecy, I see this baby, I'm gonna kill it. And Grindelwald was just like, ah, they've got a kid in the house, let's just kill it, and, like, you take care of it. It
doesn't match the decor.
Yeah, it's just like, oh gosh.
It's slashing with the walls.
This is, like, one of the weirdest conversations I feel like I've ever had. Because I'm, like, talking about killing babies, like, in, like... between Voldemort and Grindelwald, and it's just like, okay, they both really suck as people. We've established that, and it just, I don't know. I said what I said. You know, Voldemort, he did it himself. He did the job himself, and Grindelwald couldn't. And also, I agree with Meg, like, he saw Harry as a threat, and Grindelwald just was like, spare baby. So, I don't know. Continue, please, with the album.
So our last comment, and I think might get the VIP shout out for the week. She says, Santa says, Anakin's.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
I am your father.
That makes me feel much better about everything I just said, because facts. I'm glad we brought Anakin into the equation, because, oh my gosh.
Represent.
Yeah. Thanks for the album. I'm so glad that we went from this episode, or well, hold on, this past episode and that topic to this episode and what we're about to discuss, because I feel like it's a little, I mean, well, anything's more lighthearted than obviously.
It's very like, real dark last week.
Yeah. But this I feel like, I don't know, just reading everything that Craig put down, like I'm really excited to get into this and talk about it, and it does tie in, sort of.
It does.
In a good way.
I feel like it's kind of the flip side of the coin.
Yeah. It's the lighter lighter. It's good that we've got two Hufflepuffs on this episode, because my wee little Puff heart wouldn't have been able to handle last episode.
Maybe I should get into horror movies, because I was on last week's episode.
Oh,
I was there for it.
Only if they're killing babies, though, you know?
Yeah.
Gosh. Out here killing infants in Wizarding World. Oh, gosh. Okay, Craig, sorry. Take it away anytime.
So our topic this week is not about killing babies, but it might be killing babies adjacent, because we're still going to talk about the attempt on an infant's life. Because we're talking this week about sacrificial love magic, something that was very essential to the main Potter series, and now potentially could be essential to the Fantastic Beasts franchise as well. So let's step back and do a little bit of a review that likely nobody out there needs, but just in case. So, Harry survives Voldemort's initial attack because his mother refuses to stand aside and sacrifices herself in a last-ditch effort to shield her son from harm. We know that her sacrifice works, and Harry is afforded a powerful magical protection that not only protects him from Voldemort's first killing curse that night, but also prevents Riddle from physically touching Harry until the regeneration ritual in the graveyard at Little Hangleton, when Voldemort uses Harry's blood to regain his corporeal form. Now, Dumbledore makes it very clear that what fuels the magic behind this protection isn't necessarily the sacrifice itself, but what motivates the sacrifice, that being love. As a reminder, he says to Harry at the end of Sorcerer's Stone, "Your mother died to save you. If there is one thing Voldemort cannot understand, it is love. He didn't realize that love as powerful as your mother's for you leaves its own mark. Not a scar, no visible sign. To have been loved so deeply, even though the person who loved us is gone, will give us some protection forever."
Sorry. Yeah. That's just, I love that bit.
It's a great one, right?
It's good stuff.
So, what do we know about sacrificial protection. We know that it's ancient and powerful, and it manifests as a long-lasting counter charm, capable of repelling even unblockable spells and curses, like the Killing Curse being the major example.
Mm-hmm.
We know that it's enacted when one person, who we might think of as the victim, sacrifices their own life willingly and out of deep, pure love to save the life of one or more people who we might think of as the beneficiary or the beneficiaries. We know that in order for the protection to manifest, the victim has to be given the opportunity to live, but instead choose death. So this would be why James Potter's death did not confer magical protection on Lily and or on Harry. Voldemort was intent on killing him from the get-go, and he didn't give him the same choice that he gave to Lily. James was killed outright as soon as Voldemort got to the house. And I believe Joe actually made this distinction in an interview with Leaky Con probably like a decade ago.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Because I don't mean to go off track any, but like...
No, by all means.
If for some reason Lily was like, okay, here's my baby, kill him. So James then, because he died to protect Lily and Harry, that wouldn't then transfer to Harry because of the way the situation played out?
Right. I think that's...
Oh, okay. Interesting.
We also know that this is the case because Harry is also given an opportunity to choose life, essentially, when he is given 1 hour in the pause during the Battle of Hogwarts to decide if he will meet Voldemort in the forest or not. That hour gives him plenty of time to do something else, like hide or flee, to choose life, essentially. But he willingly gives himself up instead, and he enters the forest knowing full well what fate awaits him there, that fate being death.
Mm.
We also know the effects of sacrificial protection. That the murderer cannot physically touch their intended victim without experiencing agonizing pain, that killing curses will rebound, and that this magical protection will live in the beneficiary's blood. It will stay in their veins. And that, of course, ties into the blood connection magic and the enhanced protection of a blood relative, taking the beneficiary into their home that we see in Harry becoming protected by Petunia, choosing to take him into her home. Now, it's unclear the effects when there are multiple beneficiaries, or at least it's well known to us as readers and fans. It looks like the spells wear off just more quickly rather than rebound if there's only one beneficiary. However, the only example that we have in the Wizarding World of multiple beneficiaries to sacrificial protection would be the Defenders of Hogwarts. Mm-hmm. And they were involved in a very unusual situation where the intended victim, Harry Potter, did not actually die. So maybe that has something to do with it.
It makes me think of a Harry Potter musical when he's like, yes, but I meant to.
Yeah, right. So on to the theory that was going to connect things to Fantastic Beasts. Reddit user Yosarian0220 posits that Leta Lestrange may have enacted sacrificial protection as a result of her death at the end of Crimes of Grindelwald. This Reddit user draws parallels between the flashback scene at the end of Crimes of Grindelwald with the murdered infant and the murder of Lily and James from the Potter films, even down to the different camera angles that are used to frame the babies in both scenes. So they wonder if perhaps the scene wasn't meant to just drive home how awful Grindelwald was, but to make us see similarities with the Potter's tragedy. They also bring up the backlash surrounding Leta, namely, what is the point of introducing her character and establishing all the complex connections that she has, only to kill her off at the end of that very installment? Mm. They feel that there has to be more to her and to her death specifically. So if we follow that thread, the question comes up, what if her death has now provided magical protection for Newt and Theseus against Grindelwald? If the brothers, who are bound by blood, stay together, they'll be safe, thanks to Leta sacrificing herself out of love for both of them, though perhaps somewhat different love for each of them. And we do know that love is an incredibly powerful force in Rowling's Wizarding World, if not the most powerful force. It's an integral plot point. It's a huge theme. The idea of Lily's sacrifice and how that protected Harry was a huge mystery in the original saga. And the power of love has been mentioned several times in Fantastic Beasts. Now, this could also explain how Dumbledore is so knowledgeable and sure of sacrificial love protection when Lily dies in order to save Harry, meaning he's seen it enacted before. So perhaps here in Fantastic Beasts with Leetah's death, this is where he learns about this deep, complicated magic that's powered by love for the first time. So that when, you know, half a decade later and November 1st, 1981 rolls around, he knows exactly what to do with Harry in order to keep that protection activated. So, thoughts on this theory? I mean, I think it would give a bit more weight to Leetah's death. And it could open up some interesting doors and parallels with the blood pact between Dumbledore and Grindelwald, another connection to Potter. What do you guys make of it?
Going into the movies, well, I can't say that because we didn't know what it was going to become. But after the first movie with Lestrange, I was very intrigued to see where her character was going. And then knowing for sure that she was going to be introduced in the second movie and her relationship with Theseus and her friendship with Newt, I was really excited by her character, and I did feel really shortchanged in how they handled her character. And then at the end when they were just like, oh yeah, and she's dead, I was like, either she's not dead, or when, you know, you first talked about this theory, Craig, I was like, then that would be I mean, I would hate for it to be, you know, another woman dies so that the men can live, but, you know, whatever, it's fine. But I do think that would, like you said, give her character more weight, her character's death more weight, because at first when I heard about this, I looked back on when she turned to them right before she walked into the fire. And she says, you know, I love you. And even in the script, it says she says it to both of them. Like, I think it's a really solid theory. I like it. And I like that even if it is two different kinds of love, you know, friendship love to romantic love that she has for these brothers, that it could still be enough to protect them. I like that idea. And I think if that's the direction that they're going, then I guess we'll just have to see how it plays out.
Yeah, I think you make a good point about, like, the different types of love, too. It's like, because these are two different types of love. If this is love protection, this is two different new types of love protection, because the only love protection we've ever seen at this point is, like, motherly family love.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, people who are, like, actually blood related protecting one another with their love, whereas this would be friendship love for Newt, and then romantic love for Theseus, neither of which are blood related either. So I don't know, because we don't really have any back knowledge on that specific aspect of this, like how mm-hmm. that would affect this theory. But that being said, like, mind blown. This is great. I love it. It actually makes it so, like, this whole theory makes it so Leetah isn't just another, like, throwaway character.
Yeah.
Like,
just like name dropping, oh, here's a Lestrange. You know, just for fun, for the, like, fans.
I mean, honestly, like, half, like, in my opinion, hot takes with Juliana, half the characters in Crimes of Grindelwald are, like, throwaway characters. Like,
oh, yeah.
Because half the reason being is because they are literally thrown away to death at the end. It's not like it's just like, oh, they left. It's like, no, dead, 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 dead. Blue flames of death, you die. So this makes it so much more, like, because we do spend a lot of time on Leetah's story, and, like, it's very confusing. And that whole, like, weird baby thing, at first I thought it was, like, a dancing ghost coming down from the ceiling. I was like, ooh, a fancy dancing ghost. And then I was like, wait. I was like, wait, no, we're in the water. And I was like, maybe it's a spirit? And then, like, I literally had to go back, like, even after I watched it, because at the end of Crimes of Grindelwald, literally I was sitting in the theater, I'm like, literally, what the fuck? Literally just, like, sitting there just being like, and looking at my boyfriend, who's like a casual Harry Potter fan, and he's like, not really that phased, but he's like, just like, has a look of like being puzzled on his face, and I'm literally just there like being like, oh my god, what the hell just happened? That was bonkers.
I remember, because you mentioned the, you know, her Boggart. I remember seeing that and, you know, not knowing what it was the first time. I thought it was some sort of, like, anti-Obscurus. Because when we first saw in Newt's case, when Jacob's approaching the Obscurus, it was in this, like, cold tundra. And it was dark. And, like, the movement was kind of similar.
Yeah.
Like, it almost looked like a black cloak. And so I saw that and I was like, what is this? I was like, is this how we're going to fight the Obscurus? Like, I was just so confused.
And like, and why she would be afraid of it. It's like,
yeah,
it's like the Obscurus of like, of the gods. And
yeah.
She's scared of it. How yeah. dark is her soul truly?
Yeah. Just, I don't know. I was very confused about that part, but obviously they went on to explain and I was like, ah, this sucks. Again, with killing babies, but oh god,
she keeps coming back to killing the babies.
I just thought that, I was like, oh gosh. I think I not to give anyone like a hall pass or anything, but I feel with Leeta, she was young and didn't really know what she was doing, you know, and obviously it weighed on her very heavily throughout her life. Whereas Voldemort and Grindelwald were just like, meh, babies, kill them all. So I think that's, you know, obviously difference in character, but it is telling that so many characters kill babies and it's this huge like moral
underlying theme.
Yeah, like it just keeps popping up for whatever reason. And killing is bad in general, but I can't remember. Maybe it was a long time ago, but talking about redemption with, I think it was Shannon. And how, like, killing babies was seen as the ultimate, like, there's no turning back from that. Mm-hmm. And that's why Leeta had to die, despite her guilt and, you know, telling the truth eventually and everything, whatever. But I don't know. Maybe part of the redemption is that she dies to save Newt and Theseus with this love magic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Interesting. I don't know. So,
Let me just go on record, too, for saying that the reason that Leeta killed Corvus is so silly. Like, what, like, 7 or 8-year-old is going around switching babies in like, little bassinets? Like, no part of me when I was little was like, you know what? I'm going to swap these kids because that kid ain't crying and this one that I have next to me is. So what I'm going to do is swap them. Not just like yell. Like if I was a little kid, I'd probably like end up screaming at the baby, being like, "Shut up! Shut up! Shut!" I wouldn't like actually like be like, "This seems like a very complex thought process for how old she was, and just the fact that she's like, tee hee 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 hee. No one's going to notice that these are two different children."
I had
lots of feelings about that movie. If you hadn't guessed,
don't. We all at this point, and especially if they're making us wait so long for the third one that we have to theorize about all of these things that they either left open-ended or just are probably never going to answer.
Probably ever. Not.
Yeah, but I feel like this is something that's not like this topic in particular is not something that won't be explored further. You know, we will either come to find out that Leeta didn't die, or we will come to find out the true purpose of why she did die, you know? And I think that's why this is a good theory, because it does dig deeper into it other than just being like, oh, here's a bad character who did bad things, and in order to atone for them, she must die, you know? Like, it's, and we only really introduced her in this movie, and it just, I don't know, it got kind of murky. Like, they just, I feel they mishandled her character. So that's why I'm like, I like this theory. Maybe, you know, maybe that is what they were going for. And if not, then hopefully something.
I feel like Leah's character yeah. kind of like leaves me with the same taste that Barb from Stranger Things did, where it's like hashtag too soon. Like she's just like gone. It's like we just got Barb and now she's gone. We just got Leah and now she's gone. And they're like, there's no like definitive like is she coming back? We don't know. It's all a big mystery.
Yeah,
I don't even know if you guys watch Stranger Things or not, but
oh yeah,
of course.
Well, that was like another instance of killing off a side character in order to further the stories of the main characters, you know, like to get them involved into the main storyline, because otherwise in Stranger Things Nancy wouldn't have gotten involved with everything that was going on. And they do that true. In Stranger Things where everyone's all separated at the beginning of the season and they all converge at the end of the season because come to find out they've all been working towards the same goal. But with Fantastic Beasts, it kind of was like that.
But much more loose-ended, I feel like.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Because it wasn't like, because like, you know, spoiler alert, Stranger Things, they show Barb's body. They're like, she's for sure dead. Like,
yeah.
Definitely, totally dead. And they kind of, you know, let that one go. But with Fantastic Beasts and Crimes of Grindelwald, it's like, she could have been anyone, but they made her the Strange, first of all. So I feel like that's, you know, that's adding more importance to her. And then secondly, she was friends with Newt. She was engaged to Theseus. Like, she's very intertwined into the main characters' lives and into the main storyline, whether she likes it or not. So to just kind of kill her off and it just be like, oh, well, because she did bad things. Like, I don't know. Yes, she's a very complex character. I'd almost, in terms of complexity, not in terms of like she reminds me of this character, just in terms of complexity, I think of like her and Snape in that they're very gray characters, because obviously nothing else about her reminds me about Snape. Like, she wasn't
creepily obsessed with someone else's
yeah, like
wife.
Just like just they were both Slytherins and that's about it. But it just, I don't know, I would be very disappointed if they kind of just expect us to accept, like, if we move on to the third movie and then they're just like, man, it's a shame Leah died, right? And they're like, right, and then they just move on like nothing else.
And Theseus is like, I miss her, and Newt's like, me too, and then they yeah. just move on.
Yeah. The end.
But at least she atoned for her baby killing.
Yeah.
That's true.
Like some people.
But like, yeah, so that was another thing I was kind of thinking about when I was going through this theory, like thinking about the motivation behind it. Like, Dumbledore says, you know, it has to, you have to actually love somebody to enact this magic. And I'm like, but do we know that for sure? Or do you just have to die for them? Like, yeah. did Harry actually yeah. love everybody fighting in the Battle of Hogwarts?
No.
True.
The answer is no.
I am so in love with this person, I must save them.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the girl who's in love with him who does gives him the love potion? It's escaping my name. It starts with an R. Romilda Vane. I love her. She's great. Yeah. Harry must have loved her to death. We must save Romilda. Save Romilda. Hashtag save Romilda.
I think for Harry it was more like a general like sense of love. You know, like you have a love for, I don't know. You know, he had a love for the people defending him and fighting for him and fighting for what was right and, you know, fighting against the Death Eaters and, you know, his schoolmates and his professors and his essentially his family, you know, his friends and his friends that became family, like, you know, the Weasleys and everything. So it just kind of, I don't think it had to be this like all encompassing, like I love each individual person this right. much. Like, it just mm-hmm. I think that love was enough to yeah.
so that sort and, of like abstract I love the idea of everybody up there kind of
yeah.
thing.
Yeah, like I love them enough to do this for them,
yeah,
to mm-hmm. sacrifice myself. I think, because I think even the sacrifice itself is very telling. Like, he did that for people he probably didn't even know, probably didn't even speak with.
Wouldn't it be hilarious if like there were people up there that Harry didn't love and they just started getting like hit with guilt for
this the second. What's going on? Yeah.
And Harry's like, I don't love you. I protect you.
What, you think I was going to sacrifice my life for you? I don't even know your first name.
Who are you again?
Oh, love.
Well, that's That's all I got. Unless you
guys pretty good. I mean,
something you want to add?
I could just kind of spiral into a Lita discussion. So that's why I'm like, I feel fine about what I contributed because I don't want to devolve into something that it's not. I think it's a really solid, I just really think it's a really solid theory, and I like it, and I love when people come up with things that I feel are sometimes like maybe really obvious to other people, and then when they're brought up to me, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, yeah, that's true, like, that's good, why didn't I think of that?
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, it's obviously not the most obvious thing, but it's something that, having read the initial Harry Potter series and, you know, watch the movies and everything, because we know where the storytelling has led before, it's like we can kind of see where it can lead again. Mm-hmm. That's why I think love magic is definitely something that could come into play.
Agreed.
Yeah. I don't think we've seen the last of it.
Definitely not. Well, if we want, I can time turn this B.
A few times should do it, love.
I've only done Time Turner like once or twice before. Maybe just once. I don't know.
Well, that's so, more than Craig and I, so.
Yeah, it's one more than we have.
So forgive me. I'm doing my best. But I wanted to try to tie it into main discussion as best as I could. But when I Googled love magic, it was not quite the love magic of dying and protecting those you love. But still, I thought the things I was reading was interesting enough to share, because for reasons that I'll get into, obviously. So the history of, quote, love magic, and this is according to Wikipedia mostly, because...
Ooh, a solid source of information.
Thank you. So a definition for love magic was celebrating one's love for the self and being the love that is wanted from another. Romantic love requests an equal partner to enjoy sex. Let me just insert myself into this real quick. Obviously, with the previous love magic we were talking about, it did not involve sex whatsoever. So everything that I'm about to say, you can well and truly take with a grain of salt. Like I said, this is Wikipedia. I'm just reading it off, basically. Okay, back to the quote. It can be implemented in a variety of ways, such as written spells, dolls, charms, amulets, potions, or different rituals. So this could kind of be like the love magic of, because it says different rituals, I guess kind of a ritual is dying for someone. But also when you think of love magic, you probably also think of, you know, the love potion that they have in Harry Potter. So like it said, potions, spells, rituals, whatnot. And even with Queenie and Jacob, she obviously is not using a potion. She's using a spell. So I think that's something they kind of touch on in both series. So for love magic, the earliest attestations of love magic derived from the ancient Near East, dating to 2200 BCE. If I mispronounce this word, I apologize. Cuneiform tablets preserving rituals of erotic magic have been uncovered at Tel Inkara and Isin, which is present-day Iraq. Similar rituals are attested in ancient Egypt, for instance, on an ostracon dated to the 20th dynasty, 12th to the 11th centuries BCE. And again, all this eroticism, it's not what we were previously talking about, but, you know, it's what came up. Spells of erotic attraction and compulsion are found within the syncretic magic tradition of Hellenistic Greece, which incorporated Egyptian and Hebraic elements as documented in texts such as the Greek magical Pyrian archaeologically on amulets and other artifacts dating from the 2nd century BC and sometimes earlier to the late 3rd century AD. These magical practices continue to influence private ritual in Gaul among Celtic peoples, in Roman Britain, and among Germanic peoples. Erotic magic reflected gender roles in ancient Greece and dismissed modern misconceptions about gender roles and sexuality, distinguished between the magic as eros, as practiced by men, and the magic of philia, practiced by women. So remember that distinction. I think I touch on it again later on. During the later medieval period, 14th to 17th century, marriage developed into a central institution for public life. This is reflected in their love magic. While the immediate desire was the act of intercourse itself, it was most often...
It's getting real steamy all up in here.
Yeah. About sex, baby. love magic. It was most often practiced in an attempt for a permanent union, such as marriage. Men and women of status and favor were more often the targets of love magic. Economic or social class restrictions would often inhibit a marriage, and love magic was seen as a way to break those barriers, leading to social advancement.
See, that's like a sugar daddy.
Vain in the love potions.
Yeah.
Going after Harry just because he's the chosen one. He had the status.
You know, it made me think of...
Gotta marry Rich.
Tom Riddle Sr., and is it Merope? I always mispronounce it. Okay. And that's what that made me think of, because even though in the wizarding world, she obviously came from she was an heir of Slytherin. She had a certain, even though her family like at the time was like not really well thought of, she came from like a certain kind of status. But he, in the Muggle world, was very obviously, like, good-looking and rich and came from a, like, good family. Like, they were, you know, very...
He was, like, the Brad Pitt of their like, community, where, like, everyone's like, oh, my God, it's Brad. It's Tom.
Tom Riddle.
Or, like, you know how, like, Gaston is in Beauty and the Beast, where everyone's like, whoa! Yes. Oh, boy, Gaston!
Yeah, so he was Gaston. oh goodness, sorry.
I blame one of the silly girls in that, one of the little blonde girls.
Yeah.
In musical. That was my role in junior year of high school. I was a silly girl. That's the official title of that role.
Woo! Gaston aside, with the dominance of Christianity and Catholicism in Europe during the Renaissance, elements of Christianity seeped its way into the magic rituals themselves. Often clay dolls or written spell scrolls would be hidden in the altar at churches, or holy candles would be lit in the rituals. The host from a Catholic mass would sometimes be taken and used in rituals to gain the desired result. Thus, love magic within the Renaissance period was both Christian and pagan, which I thought was interesting, because... now we've got people banning books at schools because apparently the spells are all super real in the Harry Potter books.
Yeah, because you know, like I just made a rat into a tea kettle earlier today, and then I was gonna go after someone else and Crucio them. So
yeah,
that way,
like
that way I could get the best seat.
I didn't travel at all yesterday. I just apparated. Like, it was nothing. Airplanes? What? What are those? So, in literature and art, the motif of a genuine love spell is interwoven more often and made the starting point of tragic setbacks and complications. I added this part in because it obviously did kind of tie into Tragedy of Leda and death and love magic and Lily as well. So one of the earliest manifestations of the theme in the Western world is the story of Heracles and Deianira. A famous treatment of the subject is in Richard Wagner's opera Tristan and Isolde, which in turn goes back to the same epic by Gottfried von Strasberg. Other examples of the use of love magic motif are Donizetti's The Elixir of Love and Manuel de Falla's Ballet El Amor Brujo, or The Magic of Love. So love magic has gone back very far, and it comes in many forms, and sometimes it's sexy and sometimes it's not. And by sexy, I mean sexual. I don't mean like consent is what's sexy, guys. So don't do love spells, even if they don't work. But back when they distinguished between the magic, love magic as performed by men, how it's eros, and love magic as performed by women was philia. It's interesting because I actually came across a tweet of all things earlier today that talks about different forms of love. And I know we were talking about different forms of love in our main discussion, because we were talking about Lily, how that's a familial love, and with Newt, it was a friend-type love, and with Theseus. Obviously, it was a romantic type of love. So this tweet, ancient Greeks had 7 types of love: Eros, sexual passion; Philia, deep friendship; Ludus, playful love; Agape, love for everyone; Pragma, long-standing love. I'm probably mispronouncing a few of these, if not all of them. I'm sorry. Philautia, self-love; and Storge, parental love. So I just thought that was interesting that I came across that today. And I was like, oh, hey, wait. I've seen Eros and Philia just last night when I was putting it in the dock. So yeah, I just wanted to talk a bit about love magic. Any thoughts you have about any of the things that I said?
So my first thought, and you can cut this out if this is inappropriate or not. My first thought when we read the first part was like, yeah, this is masturbation. Like, literally, like, I was like, I mean, like, isn't, like, the first form of, like, sexual self-love is masturbation. So that was my first thought. And I was like, okay, cool. Moving on. And then we got a little bit further down and I was like, oh, okay. So this is like a sugar daddy situation we kind of have going on here, where it's like, it kind of gets back to like how the world used to be, where the only way that a woman could really advance in society, because like you couldn't have a job, you never had money, the only thing you had was a dowry, and your dowry only was given to you when you got married.
Yeah.
And if you didn't have really much of a dowry and you married into a poor family, like, I'm sorry, but this girl, she's screwed for the rest of her life.
Yeah.
Because she ain't moving out unless she, because really the only job you could have as a female, like, back in, like, ancient times was, like, honestly a prostitute. Like,
I was actually going to add in, there was a whole subsection. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. It just.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Whole section I didn't add in because I was like, this is long enough. But there was a whole subsection on Wikipedia about love magic and women. And it did talk about prostitution and a bunch of different things that I thought. One, like I said, I've already gone on long enough about love magic. I just kind of wanted to touch the bases of like different parts of history where it was mentioned. And two, I was like, I'm not sure if this would be cut from the show or not. So that's what I was like, maybe I won't mention it. But it is interesting that you said that, because that was something, like, if anyone wants to literally just Google love magic and go to the Wikipedia page, I thought it was pretty interesting. I thought there was a lot on there that I wish I could have included, because there was just a lot of really interesting stuff that they had about it, stuff that I didn't know. I guess because I don't know anything about love magic, but yeah, I think it's worth a read if anybody feels like checking it out. And there were obviously, when you Google it, there are other things that pop up that I think are worth taking a peek at. Yeah, sorry, that made me think of.
Yeah, I mean, I think you make a good point, like about like the prostitution side and like how it's. I'll definitely go back and read that article. Because in my head now, I'm kind of thinking, like, this is so, like, take this with a grain of salt. I have not read the entirety of the Wikipedia. Also, I don't know how accurate the actual Wikipedia is. I'm just going off of my own background knowledge of history right now. My background knowledge of history is that history is very sexist. And that this just kind of seems like there's probably a lot of sexism built into this, because like I said, like the only way that a woman could really move forward in the world and to get money, this was to marry someone. And if they're not marrying someone, then they're a prostitute pretty much. And I guess the use of this love magic, whether it be through prostitution or whether it be through actually seeking out a husband, you're kind of going for the same end result. Like, the woman just wants to make some money. Like, and can anyone blame her? No. Like, so I'm sure, like, when this love magic was initially being, like, put into practice, men were like, ooh, this is just a scary thing that, like, witches do, because they're looking to get to my money and get to things like that. So I feel like a lot of this, or it was guys trying to get, like, the pretty girls. So I feel like a lot of it was probably
based off of men's views of like how this like quote unquote love magic was being used, whether it's them using it for their own means and being like, well, I must have the most, like, kind of getting back to the Gaston thing, like, I must have the most beautiful wife, or ladies being like, damn, you know, this week was real short, I barely got a loaf of bread, I need to make some money right now, like, what am I gonna do? I'm gonna go and I'm gonna take this swamp water, I'm gonna put a nice little label on it, I'm gonna tell the guy next door that it's a love potion, and we'll just go from there, see how much money I can make off these losers. Or they're just gonna use like some kind of perfume that they have to be like, ooh, I am a prostitute and I have love magic. And like really it's just like a perfume they had like sitting around in their house. And they're just trying to like make some money off these guys. So I feel like a lot of it is probably very sexist. I mean, let's be real here.
Yeah, but there was, like I said, the fact that there was a whole section in the Wikipedia article that was just love magic and women, I thought was interesting. Because obviously, even with, what was it? Yeah, ancient Greece, they distinguish between men practicing love magic and women practicing love magic with different terms. So, yeah, I don't know. It's definitely interesting. History definitely has been viewed through a certain lens. I don't know, yeah. Craig, any thoughts?
As the man on our podcast, Craig, if you didn't feel targeted already, would you like to give your 2 cents?
No, I think you guys hit the nail on the head with everything. I was just going to say, I thought it was interesting that even in our world, the real world, this idea of love magic goes way, 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 way back. Like in the wizarding world, it's also this very ancient, very old form of magic that not everybody seems to completely fully understand.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting.
Oh, yeah. I definitely agree on that. Yeah, I thought even though I did my best to tie in to main discussion in love magic, and like parts of it did.
Yeah, definitely.
But it was interesting how there were so many different definitions, so many different time periods, so many different examples. And so that's why I think like even within the wizarding world, like no wonder it's such a big mystery, because there could be so many different types of, you know, quote, love magic. So yeah, I don't know. That's right. The time turner for you for this episode.
So our podcast question for this episode is, what do you make of Leda's death? Do you think it enacted any sort of sacrificial protection for Newt and for Theseus? Is there more to it? Tell us why or why not. And you can do so by dropping us an owl on any of our various social media outlets, or you can email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com. And of course, we would always love it if you would leave us a review on iTunes.
And you can always find us at SpeakBC on Instagram and Twitter. At Facebook, we are facebook.com/SpeakBC. Tumblr, we are speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com. And if you're feeling really generous and a niffler has left you a little bit of extra gold, maybe not $308 worth of gold, but a little bit less, you can show us some support over on Patreon and become a patron of our show. If you go over to patreon.com/speakbeastie and you pledge at the $1 level or above, you'll have access to our fabulous Speak Beastie Common Room, where you can interact with all the other fans there and the hosts. And we hope that the niffler that is $308 will maybe lend you a buck or two. Who knows? You might get lucky. Give them a little tickle in the tummy. And so that concludes our episode.
Yes, I'm Ariel.
I'm Juliana.
And I'm Craig. Case closed.